sometimes you gotta think like a lady.
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 And act like a boss.
Welcome to Think Like a Lady. You can follow us on Twitter at @ThinkLikeALady_ or on Facebook at @ThinkLikeALadyPodcast, as well as on Instagram at @ThinkLikeALady_podcast. We're available to listen to on all the major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or just ask Amazon Alexa. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Think Like a Lady.
Hi, guys. My name is Dua. My background is in criminal justice and forensic psychology. I also have a degree in information technology. Currently, I'm an entrepreneur in education. I also work with VR and AR being interpreted into the education that I deal with. Additionally, I do some humanitarian activist work, which revolves around aviation, aviation safety, and disaster management safety as well.
My name is Afroz. I'm a population health scientist out in San Diego, California. My job is to primarily assess all of San Diego's population as a whole in order to bridge the gap between social disparities in health from, let's say, low-income communities to people who are well-off, minorities, the underserved. And I do that by assisting doctors, by giving them a bird's-eye view of what San Diego's health looks like so they can implement it on their one-on-one interactions. So one of the reasons why we started this podcast is to serve fellow women and address topics that are rarely talked about in a dynamic way, in a different way. Today's topic, we're going to be discussing leaving toxic marriages, but we're going to discuss it in a way of why it's not such a bad thing. And we're going to give you a unique perspective and some data as to why that is. And our very own Dua is a survivor of this dynamic. So, Dua, you've been married twice. What were the struggles and how did you leave it?
Correct. I've been married twice. I've also been divorced twice. But what I want to talk about actually a little bit more so is my most recent one. I was married in 2018. It was Ramadan of 2018. So I was married to this individual for 2 years. His background, just to give you guys a kind of imagery of the situation, he was Pakistani. He was born in Pakistan, but he was raised in Pakistan up until he was 10 years old. And then he had moved to the UK. Since the age of 10, he had lived in the UK. So when I had met him, you know, I was in my late 20s, he was in his early 30s. And I was under the impression that, because me, myself, you know, raised in the West, I was under the impression that, you know, you hear these stories of individuals from Middle Eastern countries not necessarily, you know, treating their women properly or whatever, you hear these stories. I was under the impression that he had been a little bit more westernized in that regard and how he viewed women because of the fact that he spent the majority of his life in the UK. However, I was wrong with that. So basically what had happened was we had gotten married. It was very, very quick. We had met online and it was something that we decided to proceed with. We wanted to keep everything halal. So we decided that, you know, we liked each other. We thought that we were, you know, good for each other. For me, the most important thing was somebody who understood the religion and they followed the religion, and the religion was an important part of their life. And he, you know, I saw that, you know, alhamdulillah, you know, he prayed his prayers, he fasted. When he was speaking about Islam, he was very knowledgeable in a number of areas when it came to Islam. So, you know, that was another reason why I had proceeded with the marriage. I had done istikhara to make sure that it was the right decision for me, and the kind of signs that I was getting back it was positive. And so I was pretty confident in jumping in. So we did decide to do it in Ramadan. I went ahead, I flew to Pakistan with him, performed the nikah ceremony there. Prior to the marriage, he was extremely chivalrous. I mean, somebody who would, you know, pull out your chair for you, somebody who would open the door for you, somebody who would, very kind the way he spoke, very courteous, very kind to my mother, very, just honestly, a true, true, true gentleman. And very respectful. And then, you know, we flew to Pakistan, we did the nikah ceremony, and it was almost like not even 48 hours later, it was a complete 180 in his personality. And I was shocked. I was shocked by seeing his this anger and this aggression, and I can't even describe it.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, it was very, very overwhelming. It was like, you know, I felt like I had been manipulated. I felt like I had been tricked into marrying him.
You know, you marry him and he's not who you thought he was. So did you feel betrayed in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because you spend this time getting to know this person and then you find out that everything you knew was not true. I mean, there were lies about, he had lied to me about his history. He had lied to me about his education. He had lied to me about his previous relationships he had been in. He had lied to me about everything. And not only that, most importantly, he had lied to me about his character. He had faked his character. There were a number of things that had I known them and had I known the truth about them, I wouldn't have wanted to marry him. Basically, what happened was we flew back to the UK and he was a completely different person. I mean, we're talking the tiniest of things would make him freak out. I mean, and he would start screaming at the top of his lungs. He would start shouting very, very aggressive, you know, just get in my face.
Like what set him off?
I honestly didn't know what was going to set him off. Like sometimes I would make a joke and he would be fine with it. And then sometimes like I'd make a similar joke and he wouldn't be fine with it. It was like very bipolar. I felt like I was constantly walking on eggshells.
Right.
Sometimes it was something as small as me just looking at him, giving him a certain look that he didn't particularly like. And then he would snap and he would start screaming. And when he started screaming, it lasted for hours. He would insult me. He would put me down. He would put my family members down. He prevented me from being able to speak to my family members. I wasn't really allowed to have any friends. If he was screaming at me and shouting at me, it wasn't something that just lasted like 15, 20 minutes. We're talking hours. Like, sometimes it would start in the morning and he would be screaming at me until going to bed at night. I wasn't allowed to leave the house. I wasn't allowed to call anyone. He would take my phone from me. Most of the time I locked myself in the bathroom. I remember running into the bathroom so many times, like curling up in a ball, and I'm being completely serious, curling up in a ball and just covering my ears like a child. You know, like when you're yelling at a child, they just cover their ears because I couldn't listen to the things he was saying. You can't even hear it. Like hearing it is so painful. I would just cover my eyes and just, I'd be crying. I'd be crying for hours and hours. And then at the end of the night, when everything was said and done, whenever he snapped out of his mood, then he would try to have sex. It was a cyclical thing. It was pretty overwhelming.
I mean, so I know you mentioned off air that he was the only brother among what, five or six siblings? And somehow they gave him a medallion for being a boy when he was growing up. So, you know, his family kind of fed into his ego that he kind of had a short fuse, or at least I would assume. How did that manifest in your relationship? I mean, was it just you two who lived together? Were there other people in the home?
So his sister lived with us. And what I later found out, you know, when we had first gotten married, he had told me that he owned his own house. He was financially capable of having me and my son and all of these things. Later, it became very clear to me that he did not have his own house and that he could not afford the house without his sister's help. So his sister was living with us and she was, yeah, I mean, she babied him. I mean, you know, she was about, I don't know, 10 years older than him or something. I mean, it was a cultural thing, wasn't it? I mean, she was expected to take care of him in that regard. She would, you know, if he needed a second plate of food, instead of him getting up and getting it, she would get it for him. And I'm not used to this. The boys in my family, alhamdulillah, you know, the women in the house are not their slave. And that's how we were raised. Yeah. I mean, I hate to say it, but in a lot of Middle Eastern cultures, that is not how the boys are raised. They're raised to think that the women are their, you know, slave, and that the women, the girls in the house, you know, need to do whatever it is that they want. So he spent his whole life with five sisters, basically catering to his every whim. And, you know, when I came into the picture, he thought that I was just going to be another woman to cater to his whim, but I'm not that kind of person. And I would absolutely stand my ground and I would tell him, no, I won't do that. No, I won't do this. You know, obviously it didn't sit very well with him.
Huh.
His sister really didn't help. His sister definitely made everything much more complicated.
My family, I'm, you know, Pakistani as well. And my family is very different. And every family is different. You'll see a diversity across the board. But I do see some Pakistani families where the old cultural norm that, you know, kind of should have ended a few generations ago, where men have to be catered to, the woman, if she works a job and she comes home, she still has to cater to the man, even if it's the same 9-to-5 job as the man. right? The society has progressed, but you'll see this, I don't want to say it's exclusive to just Pakistani culture, but Pakistani culture does have that hierarchy of, like, you know, even older siblings are expected to baby their younger siblings even until an older age.
I was there. I spent time in Pakistan. I mean, I saw it firsthand. I know exactly how, and there was a conversation that I had with one of his cousins, basically what she had said to me when I was, you know, kind of telling her a little bit of some of the things that I had been going through with him. Basically what she said to me is, what you're describing is normal. I mean, most women have husbands like this. Like, what you're describing, like, most people here wouldn't think that that's a problem. They would just think, like, what is she complaining about? She needs to, you know, shut her mouth and go, you know, go be with her husband. And I think that honestly, hearing that was a reality check of understanding that so many different cultures view marriage, they view women in such a different light, which is, I mean, there's a difference between culture and Islam. And a lot of people, unfortunately, they combine the two. And a lot of, especially Western people, they think that, oh, it's Islam that, you know, that demeans the women, but is not Islam. Women have so many rights in Islam. Women are powerful and they're protected. They're protected by the Quran. There were so many comments and hadiths made by the Prophet about how important women are, how women should be protected, how men should take care of their women. And unfortunately, the people in the West, they confuse the religion with the culture. It really is unfortunate because it's not the case.
Right. And I mean, I know you're familiar with this because you have a Middle Eastern background yourself, right?
Yes.
Going on to that, when you left your second husband, how did that go down? Because I know you probably heard a lot of excuses, as you've told me before, that it was just like, well, that's just how it is among Pakistanis. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is in Pakistan. How did you think to yourself, like, holy crap, I'm stuck in this marriage forever?
Yeah. So basically they embedded it into my head. Like, when I was in Pakistan, everybody, every single person in his family made it very clear to me that, like, once you get married, you don't get divorced. They kind of, like, implanted this thought into me. Yeah. I felt, you know, after returning back to London and realizing who he really was, you know, this was instant. You have to realize that I realized that he was somebody I didn't want to be with right away. And I was still in a marriage with him for 2 years after that. Of course, in those 2 years, I felt helpless. I felt like I had been tricked. I felt like I had been manipulated, not just from him, from his entire family. I don't understand how a family can allow their son to get married under the idea or the thought of, oh, his wife will change him. It's not somebody's daughter's responsibility to change your son. It was your responsibility to raise him correctly. And if you didn't know how to do that, then you don't need to be putting that problem onto other people's lives and ruining their lives for it. I mean, it's something that you need to help him better himself before allowing him to get married, period. You know, and alhamdulillah, I mean, everything happens for a reason, but there were many times that he had made me feel like I was trapped in terms of, you know, you've got nowhere to go, you've got nothing, who's going to take you in, kind of a thing. But the reality of it was, is because he had isolated me from my family and my family didn't even know the problem, I started to believe him. Yeah, I have nowhere to go, but actually, of course my family would be there for me if they had known the problem. Yeah, I mean, it was very overwhelming. But what had happened was my brother's wedding. Everyone kind of flew in for the wedding. Basically, what had happened was my family members saw the way that he was talking to me. I'll just give you an example. Prior to us leaving, he was more interested in arguing with me than packing. And I had said to him, I'm not going to listen to you argue with me. You know, go pack. Our flight is in less than 24 hours and you haven't packed anything. I'm not going to listen to you argue with me. And he refused. He decided to sit right in front of me while I was packing my things and just scream and yell at me. And he refused to pack. So then about 2 hours before the flight, he was running around the house like a, you know, chicken with his head cut off, trying to get everything, you know, put together and in the suitcases and whatever. And I refused to help him. I said, absolutely not. I won't help you because you refused to pack, you know, when the time was appropriate. I said I would help you at that time and you wouldn't listen to me. You just wanted to yell at me. So I won't help you. So basically, because of that, when we were in Mexico, he saw that he had forgotten to pack something. And right away, he comes out. I was sitting on the balcony or whatever with my family members and we were just all kind of sitting and talking, and he comes out and he says to me, where did you pack this? Jeans or something. I said, I don't know. I don't know if you packed that or not. And then he asked me to come into the house. So I came in and then he started yelling at me for not packing his pants. Okay. And of course, my family members overheard this because, you know, it's not like the house was so big. And so my family members overheard this and they thought that was extremely strange. Like, why is he yelling at her for not packing something? I mean, who cares? It's not a big deal, right? And I don't mean just yelling. I mean, like, aggressively shouting. His reaction was not, it didn't fit the issue. Does that make any sense? Like, it didn't match. Anyway, and this happened a couple of times. So this, for the first 3 days there, we were there for a total of 2 weeks, but for the first 3 days, my family members were just observing. They weren't saying anything. They were just observing. And eventually one of my brothers tells me to go on a car ride with him. He says, like, spill the beans, like, tell me what is going on. Does he normally treat you like this? Does he normally speak to you like this? How does he speak to your son? He just starts asking me all sorts of questions. And I mean, in the beginning, I was a little hesitant to tell him. And eventually I broke down and I told him everything. I told him everything. I told him how basically this has been going on since day one. He's extremely aggressive. He takes my phone. I'm not allowed to call anyone. I haven't told you guys because he threatens me that if I tell you guys, then, you know, we're going to have problems. He's going to take it out on me. He's going to take it out on my son. And I'd start telling my brother all of these things. And of course, my brother, very disturbed, he's very upset. He then tells my father. My father, of course, immediately says, well, this is not okay. I refuse to allow somebody to treat my daughter this way. It's completely unacceptable, both Islamically and just morally and ethically. And he asked me a question. He said, what do you want? And I said, I've been dealing with this shit for 2 years. I don't want it anymore. I want to leave. I don't want it anymore. But I don't know how to leave because every time I try to leave, he threatens me with something. So the rest of the trip was him being extremely disrespectful to my family. So he threatened my father. He yelled at my father. He almost picked a fight with my brother. He ruined my other brother's wedding. Disrespect beyond belief. I mean, he was staring at other women in front of my parents openly, with no shame and no respect. And my parents asked me, does he normally do this? I said, yeah, I'm used to it. I'm used to it because he does it all the time. And so, I mean, by the end of this trip, by the end of my parents seeing the way that he was aggressive, I mean, he yelled at them the way he yelled at me. My parents saw it firsthand because by the end of the trip, the last night of the trip, he ended up screaming at my father and my brother the same way that he normally screams at me. And when that happened, my dad said, okay, this is done. It's finished now. I no longer accept for you to be married to him. So we had flown back. My father had arranged for him to also go fly back with us. Basically just said he was going to sleep in the same room as me. So that, you know, there wouldn't be any kind of argument between me and my ex-husband, because I knew, and my dad knew, that the moment that I'm alone with him, he's going to freak out on me for everything that happened in Mexico, right? So basically my dad was just trying to prevent us from being alone. The next morning he went to work. His sister, she also left the house. And the moment that they left, my father helped me pack everything. 2 years of my life, and packed it into like 3 suitcases in maybe 3 hours. And then we left. Me and my son flew to be with my mother. That was how I left. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't have been able to do it without the help of my family.
It's almost like you had this this escape route, like this one time window of opportunity to
leave. Absolutely. Honestly, I completely, because prior to that, my family had not known. I was really scared that if I had stayed longer after that, like alone, that he would have become worse because of what had happened. So I was worried about him becoming more aggressive, more controlling. Before, I wasn't allowed to speak to my family, but now maybe I'm not allowed to even see them anymore.
I mean, what were his other methods of control? Like, did he control your finances? Were you allowed to have a job? Like, what was, you know?
Obviously, something that I had questioned him about prior to us getting married was his financial situation, because it's important. I have a son. It's important for me to make sure that, you know, this man is financially able to support me and my son. So this was a conversation we had. He made it very clear to me that he was financially stable. Obviously, he had lied about that. So yeah, I mean, when I was working, he did assist me to get a job. That is true. He made sure that I was able to get a job. But unfortunately, when I got my job and I was making my money, I was forced to give my money. So basically, I'll just give you an example, because we did the nikah, right? But we hadn't done the actual marriage kind of ceremony, which is basically like just a big celebration for everyone to, you know, I don't know, like gawk at, you know, the bride and the groom. That's basically what it is. And so we hadn't done that yet. So we were planning that one for, you know, the next year. And so I had to use my money to save up for that, which I don't know about the culture there, but in my culture, that's not how it works. The man pays for everything. I did find that a little strange, but, you know, he made it very clear to me that, you know, his parents were going to go Hajj, and so they need the money and blah, blah, blah. But his parents never ended up going Hajj. So I don't really know what happened with all of that, but, or that money, but whatever. So I had to save up all my money to go towards the wedding. Additionally, he never paid me my mahar. He also made me pay his father a certain amount of money. So in retrospect, I actually paid a mahar for him, which is really un-Islamic. But yeah, I mean, he controlled a number of things. Anytime I wanted to do anything, I had to ask his permission. Even if I wanted to, at the grocery store, if I wanted to buy something, like, you know, just normal, like apples or fruits or whatever, for me or for my son, I had to ask his permission, even if I was paying with my own money. You know, I remember when I left, you know, I was back with my mom. I remember I went shopping for the first time. This is like a day after landing back over at my mom's place. I was able to buy whatever I wanted. It was crazy. I felt like a weight was lifted off me. Like, oh my God, I can make my own decisions. I came back from the grocery store. I bought whatever I wanted. I got ice cream. I got toys. I mean, I just literally just bought whatever I wanted just because I could, you know? And then I went home and I told my mom how I felt and how overwhelming it was and, you know, how overwhelmingly free I felt. And, you know, and she got very emotional about it, and she started crying, and she said that she, you know, she obviously felt bad that she didn't know, and, you know, but alhamdulillah, I mean, you know, he had a lot of control over a lot of things.
I mean, I would imagine, like, once you left him, I mean, you fled the country and just, like, left and didn't give him a warning, because he had this effort, I don't know if it worked, to brainwash you into just believing, okay, well, I'm married, I don't have another option.
Right.
What degree did you believe that?
Yeah, I think his sister played a role in manipulating me into believing that, because his sister used to, every time we fought, she would say to me, like, you need to be more patient with your husband. So she blamed it on me. He was blaming it on me. And then I also had a third person also blaming it on me. So you're in this house, right? I didn't have any friends. I didn't have anyone to talk to. Nobody, not a single person. I did not speak to anyone about the problems that I was dealing with in my marriage. And when the two people that you're relying on, you know, to take care of you and to be there for you and to love you and whatever, and when those two people are telling you that you're the problem, eventually you start to believe it. And I started to believe it. And I thought that I was, maybe I'm the one who's starting the fights, even though the back of my head, I knew it wasn't me. I knew it wasn't me. But when everyone's telling you that it's you, eventually you start to believe it.
Right. And in a way, I would assume he kind of shot himself in the foot, because he thought that you would never leave him. Like, it probably, you know, hit him out of left field when you just randomly upped and left. Like, it might have shocked him.
Yeah, I agree. But thinking back on his personality and stuff, I think he was narcissistic. Really, I think he was. Self-centered, very egotistical, gaslighting me all the time. People who are like that, they crave power. That's the problem. They need to be in control of the person. They need to be in control of the situation. And the moment that they feel like they're losing that, they can't handle it. It's too overwhelming for them. It's a problem for them. So I had cut off all contact with him. I, you know, blocked everything. There was no way for him to contact me. And I think that was probably difficult for him based on those narcissistic characteristics.
Right. I mean, how did he react? Did he, like, blow up your phone? Was he hitting up your family members? Like, what was he trying to do? Was he trying to get you back?
So he wasn't involved at all. He sat back in a corner and he waited for his family to, quote unquote, deal with the problem, right? So basically his family members were blowing up my family members' phones. His father was speaking to my father. You know, his sister was speaking to my brother. Family members were talking at this point. And my family was saying to his family, we saw how he treats her. Firsthand, we saw it. For 2 weeks, we lived with him. And we saw his behavior. We saw his mentality. We saw his disrespect, you know, shameless, just shameless. And my father had told them, you know, this is not okay. This behavior is not okay. And their response was, she's the problem. He's okay. There's nothing wrong with him. She needs to return to her husband immediately. You know, we don't accept any of this. At some point, my father brought up the mahar. Well, you guys never even paid the mahar, which is un-Islamic. Like, where's that? And they denied it. They said, no, we don't know what you're talking about. I mean, it just, and then it opened my eyes immensely. Then I realized, okay, so it obviously he's gotten a lot of these characteristics, probably being around it in the household. Other family members are also showing these characteristics of lying and making things up. And so then it made a little bit more sense to me. Okay, well, he is the way that he is, not just because he's been put on a pedestal his whole life, but also because, you know, this is probably what he saw in the house, you know, as well. But my family tried communicating with them and helping them to understand that, you know, he probably needs some help. I mean, this is clearly an issue that goes a lot deeper, possibly even a mental health issue, possibly even bipolar. I don't know, but my family members were telling his family members that he needs help, he needs assistance, and his family members were refusing. They were saying he doesn't need any help, he doesn't need anything, he's fine, dua's the problem. Eventually, my family members stopped answering their phone calls as well, because my family said, you know what, it's like talking to a wall. They all want to pretend like there's no problem. They just want to brush it under the rug. They want me to return to him and they want me to have his babies. And they think that that'll fix the problem. At one point, he did send me a message. I got a new phone number. I have no idea how he got my new phone number. But he ends up sending me this message, long message. Basically, you know what the message said? It said, after all this is said and done, okay, I'm paraphrasing here, but it said, after all this is said and done, you're not going to have anyone to help you. You're not going to have anyone there for you. I'm the only one who's going to be there for you.
That's a typical protocol to control somebody, is to gaslight them that way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I was pissed. He didn't even apologize. Where's the apology to me? Where's the apology to my brother? He ruined my brother's wedding. Where's the apology to my parents for being disrespectful and rude? Where's the apology for anything? He basically just sat cowering behind his family members to deal with the problem. They weren't able to deal with it. So he decided to send me some messages, thinking that maybe he would be able to get me to believe his kind of sob story and come back. And I wasn't going to deal with it. So I never responded. I just finished it. It's toxic. That's what it is. From an Islamic perspective, me leaving is no problem. I mean, I was being treated badly. There is nothing wrong with divorce in Islam. I mean, yes, frowned upon to some retrospect, but nowhere in the Quran does it say that you cannot divorce. But for some reason in the culture, and I'm going to specifically say the Pakistani culture, because that was the culture I was married into, it is an extreme taboo.
Right.
It's a big no-no. You don't get divorced. Otherwise, you are looked down upon as a female and nobody will want to marry you. Excuse me? Like, who says that? Who? You're saying it? Your culture saying it? Or did Islam say that? Is your culture better than Islam? Is your beliefs better than, you know, the Almighty Allah, what Allah has said?
It's a bit of a cognitive contradiction, right? Because you already had a divorce under your belt. So if women were that bad, then why did he marry you?
Yeah, well, that's a wonderful question.
Right?
That is a wonderful question.
And it's like, not only that, like, you had been previously married and you have a son. So that's just, you know, the intent was just to put you down, because they didn't really believe that because they went through with it.
Yeah.
That's the interesting part. I mean, from what I understand, I don't want to say he's a narcissist. One, I don't know him, but two, he hasn't been diagnosed, but it does sound like he has some tendencies of it for sure.
Yeah.
I would assume, like, a person like that, the biggest, you know, hurt for him is getting left. Because being on a pedestal all your life, where you're just catered to and you're praised all your life, and, you know, you get everything that you want, and then typically the women giving it to you, you expect that out of your wife. Like, that's your bottom line expectation. And when that's not met, you get frustrated. He probably never imagined in his wildest dreams that he would ever end up divorced. It hit him out of left field.
I was raised in the West, so for me, it's, you know, if someone gets divorced, if somebody's unhappy in their marriage, I think that they should leave. If you're stuck in a toxic marriage. You only have this one life,
right?
Correct? Why would you choose to spend this life not happy and miserable and with the wrong person, with somebody who's putting you down, with somebody who's preventing you from becoming the best you that you can be?
Islamically, this is the perfect reason to leave somebody.
Absolutely.
This is what divorce is meant for. Like, if you know, if you're being psychologically abused this way or physically abused, you need to leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, from us as women to women, if you feel like you're going to, there's a stigma about being divorced and somehow you're worth less in society, divorce is not necessarily a bad thing. It's actually a positive thing. And what I mean that by is, you know, if we look at divorce rates in general, right? Like in the United States, the divorce rate is believed to be 50%, which is untrue. It's somewhere between 32 to 35%, according to CDC data. Majority of those divorces, guess what, are second and third marriage divorces.
Yeah.
So that tells you something. And we see that, you know, generally divorce rates in Muslim societies have been increasing across the board steadily. People think that's a bad thing. They think, well, you know, just if you've assigned the definition of divorce as being negative, look at the dynamic of the marriage if it necessitates a divorce, right? And we see this trend steadily rising because, you know, women now have access to education, which means they have access to careers and they're able to earn money. And economic independence affords you the audacity to leave somebody, because finances is the number one way to control somebody, to manipulate them, to feel like they can never leave you. And so, and that's what he did with you. He was controlling your money, your finances. You were earning it, but he had the control over it. And when they do that and they force you to be financially dependent on them, you sit in this dark box just thinking that I'm stuck here. I can never leave. But that's why it's a good thing that divorce rate, the divorce rate among Muslim societies is rising. Because think of it this way, too low of a divorce rate is concerning. That means typically there's a high domestic violence rate.
Mm.
That's the opposite correlation. A high domestic violence rate, or whether it be domestic violence, psychological abuse, what have you, right? A woman isn't being treated right in the home. And if it's too high of a divorce rate, that's also a concern. So it's hard to assess these things. That's why I just want women in general to understand that there shouldn't be a stigma behind divorce because people assume that you're the problem. No, there's data proving that, you know, a healthy divorce rate is a little bit higher than what it should be in Muslim societies. In our parents' generation, is just, there's no logical reasoning as to why divorce is such a bad thing, because usually they just pin it on the woman. The woman was a problem. They don't even go as far to say maybe it was a family problem. It was a dynamic. But it's almost never the man's fault.
Yeah, right? of course. It's like the man is never the problem. Right. The woman is always the issue. You know, she didn't know how to close her mouth.
Right.
If inside of you, you know, you're unhappy, then you need to do something. Because, you know, giving up and just saying, you know what, like, I'm stuck here, and like trying to accept that reality, it's not just about you. What about your children? Are you willing to accept that kind of lifestyle for your children? I mean, at the bare minimum, you should have the strength for your children to walk away from it, to protect them. And again, going back to religion, you have to balance, you have to weigh, okay, well, what's more important to me, right? Is the culture more important to me? Is what people are going to say more important to me? Is what people are going to think more important to me? Or is the Almighty Allah more important to me? Is the Quran more important to me? Is the Sunnah more important? Is the rights afforded to me by Islam more important to me? As somebody who has been through it twice, I can testify and I can say through my experience, it's not easy. Stepping up and saying, you know what, I choose myself and my children over you is not an easy task. But you know what, if you know that you're not capable of doing it alone, then you need to find the people that can help you. And there are organizations in whatever country you live in. There are plenty of NGOs and organizations. They help you to get into a safe space to live. They help you with food. They help you with housing. They help you with to make sure that you're protected. Even just going to the police, if you go to the local police and you tell them what's going on, they themselves will reach out to these NGOs and assist you, depending on whatever country that you're living in. So there are so many options, and it's really, really important to make sure that your family knows what's going on, because that's the first step. The first step is to isolate you from the people who care about you.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I mean, now that you have two divorces under your belt, do you feel that stigma? Or do you, are you, like, what's your outlook on, you know?
No, I don't feel that stigma because my happiness is much more important. It wasn't just, it was everything. I'm not just talking about like, oh, you know, he'd get angry sometimes and yell. I'm talking, it affected my entire life. Every single prayer, you're crying to Allah to help you out of this situation, to, you know, give you patience, to, you know, and it takes over your life. All that you deal with on a daily basis, you deal with hearing this person scream and shout and argue and bicker, and it exhausts you, it drains you, there's nothing left. Like, you just feel like a shell. And being out of that, honestly, I can't even describe the feeling. It feels like a weight is lifted off of you. You feel like you're alive again. You feel like you're born again. For me, it's like what people are going to say about me, what people are going to think about me. If some guy is going to tell me, you know, oh, you've been divorced, well, then I'm not interested. Okay, well, if you're not interested, then neither am I. Why would I want to be with somebody who thinks of me as lower when Islamically they have no right to do that? Islam is about equality. It's about peace. It's about not judging other people. Mm-hmm. If Islamically I have the right to get divorced, then who are you to judge me on that? Who are you to tell me that I'm not good? I'm not a good person. I wasn't a good wife because I decided to leave.
Right. I mean, that mentality is very prevalent, of course. You'll find it everywhere. But that's why I'm hoping this podcast, this episode, can change people's views on divorce in general. It's not necessarily indicative of anyone's character. It's indicative of the dynamic they were in, which are two very separate things. Mm-hmm. There is a study published by the Journal of Family Issues, and they concluded that there's an initial positive association between a wife's contribution to family income in divorce. And economic independence gives women the means to leave a marriage she is unsatisfied with rather than just dealing with it. And this is called the independence effect. It was measuring the roles of wives' economic independence and exiting bad marriages. And there's a strong correlation in that. And those of you out there wondering the intricacies of divorce and what are the determinant factors and how it may apply to your situation. Well, data proves that the number one reason of divorce is because couples lack either commitment, infidelity, they argue too much, they were married too young, and or they had unrealistic expectations. And in your case, it seems like you had expectations. He was so far from those expectations.
Yeah, exactly.
Millennials, actually, we're kind of starting to decrease the divorce rate because we're getting married later and later in life, right? Data shows CDC data shows that people who get married before the age of 25 end up divorced within 2 years. If you get married later in life, there's a higher likelihood that you won't get divorced because you're stronger mentally and you're economically stable. And this is a cause because, you know, millennials are forced to be in college longer. So that pushes off mm-hmm. marriage, right? Because of the economy, we're having to mm-hmm. get bachelor's degrees just to meet the bare minimum of a competitive market. And then sometimes we have mm-hmm. to go up to a master's as well. So that's pushing off marriage and forcing mm-hmm. millennials to get married later in life, which is actually resulting in more stable marriages and less divorces.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you agree that that's probably, you know, a good outlook on life, that perhaps it's better to get married later in life than earlier? I mean, I know you were still married later in life the second time around.
Based on my experience, I can't give you a definitive yes or no, because I got married young and that didn't work, and I got married old and that didn't work. And I would say that the biggest problem was that I was overlooking the person's flaws. Red signs that were coming up prior to us getting married, I kind of ignored them because I wanted to give this person the benefit of the doubt. I wanted to believe that they were a good person. And so you've got somebody who maybe they slip up a little here or there, you know, they say something that you're just like, well, that was strange. Like, why would he say that? Or why would he do that? But then instead of taking it as a red flag and walking away from it, instead you're just like, oh, well, he probably did it because, you know, and you come up with these excuses. And because you come up with these excuses,
definitely a cause for divorce later on. If you realize, well, this is not who he said he was. I ignored the red flags that I should have picked up on. I should have recognized. I should have done something about it when I had the chance, mm-hmm. I guess.
Right.
I don't know if age, I can't back that part up, but from my personal experiences, but I can definitely say that as females, we are very intuitive. If you have that gut feeling, if you've met somebody and you're just like, oh my God, he's perfect. He's this, he's that. But then there's like something inside of you where he's done something and it makes you feel a little uncomfortable. Instead of ignoring it, which is what most women would do, you need to genuinely look at it with a magnifying glass. It's not just about you. It's also about your children. Is this the man that you want raising your children? Is this the man that you want influencing your children? Sometimes we allow people to treat us badly when we don't deserve it. And, you know, we come up with these excuses for why it's okay. Put that aside and don't think about yourself. Think about your future. Think about your children. If he's going to be beating you, if he's going to be screaming at you, you really think he's not going to be doing the same thing to the children in the household? I mean, maybe there are exceptions. I've never heard of it though, but at some point then they do start to take out their anger on the children. Additionally, I do want to mention that you feel it. You feel it inside of you and you feel like, okay, I know something's wrong. I know that this isn't normal. It's not normal for me to be crying every day. It's not normal for me to be screamed at every day. I know that this isn't normal, but almost like I said, you know, you're manipulated by, I was manipulated by him. I was manipulated by his sister into believing that, you know, I was the problem and whatever, right? So when my family found out, and they were telling me these things as well. They were saying, you know, this isn't normal. This isn't normal. I knew inside of me that they were right. But sometimes you need to hear these things from like an outsider's perspective for it to really hit you properly. So there was a conversation that I had had with a professional, and this particular woman said to me, I know that you think these things are okay, and I know that they have convinced you that these things are okay, but I want you to know from a professional standpoint, and even just as another human being, I want you to know that what you're going through is not okay. And you know how you are being treated, this is not acceptable, and you are being abused. And when I heard this coming from a third person, a third party who doesn't know me, who doesn't know him, and being told that directly, it just broke me. I just started crying like uncontrollably, hearing it from somebody else being told, you don't deserve to be treated this way. And what's happening is really not okay. You need to leave that scenario. It just hits you differently. You then view the whole thing from a completely different light. So I think it's really important if you're struggling with being in a toxic relationship and you're afraid to go to your parents or your family or whoever, at the bare minimum, you know, try to have a conversation with somebody who maybe has some knowledge in this, and being able to hear it from them can really change your perspective. Mm-hmm. If you're at a point where you feel like, I don't know how I could possibly leave, I don't think that there's anything wrong with doing it the way that I had done it, where it's honestly just taking your things and leaving. And actually, from the stories that I've heard of with NGOs that I've been in contact with, a lot of them have told me similar stories. A lot of women have told me similar stories. The only way that I could leave was by packing my things and leaving when he wasn't home and he didn't know.
Right. Because if you want it to be transitional, you're never leaving.
Exactly.
You kind of just up and do it.
Yeah.
That makes sense, because that if you do that, you're allowing yourself time to convince yourself otherwise. Right.
Well, I don't know about convince yourself, maybe scare yourself. Oh, is he going to find me? Is he going to stop me? What's he going to do to me? And then additionally, give him the time to convince you otherwise. So if he sees that you're distancing yourself emotionally, what he'll do then is become very sweet and very kind and very, oh, you know, baby, I bought this for you. Just shower you with gifts and be very romantic. And then of course you see that and you're like, oh, see, he does want to change. And you know, you convince yourself that, oh, things are going to get better, but basically he's nice for 24 hours and then he's back to the way that he is.
So what's your message for women out there who feel trapped in a marriage and who also fear the stigma of divorce?
Okay, there's a couple of things. The first thing is that you shouldn't hate yourself. Something that I initially felt was that I had made the wrong choice. I think it's important to realize that there's the qadr of Allah, like there's the predestination of Allah, right? Which we as Muslims, we accept that. Alhamdulillah, you know, you were put in this situation for whatever reason it may be. And you may not understand it today. You may not understand it in a year from now. You may not even understand it in 10 years from now. But regardless of whether you understand it or not, you were put in that situation because Allah wanted you to be in that situation. And Allah doesn't put anyone in a situation that they are not capable of handling. And it says that in the Quran, right? So that's the first thing, is don't blame yourself. Don't think, I chose the wrong person. I shouldn't have married him. If Allah decided that you were going to marry him, you were going to marry him regardless. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to know that the only person's opinion in this world that should matter to you is Allah's opinion. Because these people who live on this earth, I mean, they're not going to care about you on the day of judgment. That's just, we know this for a fact. You know, we're all on our own on that day, and we're not going to care about our parents, we're not going to care about our kids, we're just going to care about ourselves, right? If you're concerned about these people who are going to talk smack about you, who are going to be saying bad things about you, then what you need to remind yourself is, let them talk. Why not? If this person is talking bad about you, then who's getting the hasanat for that? If somebody's, it's a sin to talk badly about somebody behind their back. So if they want to speak badly about you, let them speak badly about you, and let yourself get the hasanat for how they're speaking badly about you. A lot of people get stuck in this mindset of this world, right? In Islam, we know that there's a balance. There's a balance between this world and the next world. If your only focus is, what's my parents going to say? What's my auntie going to say? What's my cousins going to say if I divorce him? If that's your only concern, then you need to reprioritize and refocus on the Islamic aspect of it as well. It is your Islamic obligation to protect yourself. It's also your Islamic obligation to protect your children. Everyone is so focused on the cultural side of things, the taboos, the he said, she said, all of this stuff. That's what everyone's focusing on. But everybody is losing the focus on the Islamic side of it. In Islam, it is allowed for a woman to divorce. It is allowed for a divorce to happen. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. Allow that to be your strength. Even though you feel like all of these people are going to be talking bad about you, all of the stigma, all of this, all of that, Allah is with you.
Right. Your happiness is not an entitlement. Like, you owe yourself that. It's a duty. And, you know, if you're a woman out there who feels the stigma of divorce, or, you know, you're in a bad marriage and you're afraid to leave, there's a cultural shift happening, right? Mm-hmm. You're participating in that giant cultural shift that, hey, now we're finally living in a time where it's okay for a woman to leave a bad marriage. And it shouldn't stick with her. It doesn't stick to men the way it does to women. Yeah. So, you know, you're participating in that cultural shift and revolutionizing the notion behind that. Mm-hmm. And of course, on a massive social level, you are one piece of the puzzle, and you definitely get credit for that, mm-hmm. for participating in changing the culture. Mm-hmm. On top of that, I mean, I'm talking to someone who has two divorces under her belt. Probably and very well be has nothing to do with you. It has to do with a dynamic. And that's what people need to understand, is that a lot of the times divorces happen because of the marriage dynamic. Sometimes it is because of exactly one person. And there could very well be that chance that you run into that type of person who doesn't treat you well multiple times. It doesn't say anything about you as, you know, in terms of your character.
The most important thing is that learning from it. A lot of people get stuck in that cycle of continuing to meet the wrong, like, quote unquote, wrong people, right? Mm-hmm. And toxic relationships or toxic marriages over and over again. And I think the most important thing to take away from any relationship or marriage or anything that does end is not just what they did, right? You know, this person could have treated you worse than anything. It's not just about them. It's also, you know, yourself. Okay, well, what could I have also done differently in terms of my next relationship? Maybe there is some truth to the fact, you know, I should be a little bit more patient, or I should be communicating a little bit, I don't know, differently, or whatever it is, right? So it's not just looking out for those signs of what not to get again in terms of that person's character. It's also wanting to better yourself. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You know, if you realize that communication really was a problem from your previous marriage, then instead of just saying, oh, well, he wasn't good at communicating, you need to say, yeah, well, communication was a problem, and it's something that I myself should also work on.
Right, the dynamic, but it's not any one person.
Exactly. And so a lot of the times you have people who they blame, isn't it? It's like they play the blame game. Oh, it was him. Oh, it was her. How is that going to prevent your next marriage from being that way? You know what I'm saying?
For sure. There are people out there who get divorced for dumb reasons, but majority of the time, the reason for women is because they're not being treated well.
Yeah.
And when I mean dynamic, it goes beyond than just two people.
Yeah.
We're talking about growing up with different mentalities. things.
Yeah.
That's a dynamic,
yeah.
Right? Being taught different values. And sometimes having different values can be compatible.
Right.
And sometimes having the same values is incompatible.
Yeah.
It's navigating how well you can complement each other. And if there's a point where you guys are just butting heads, then that shows you that the dynamic needs some work.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when, you know, the dynamic can't be solved, it's not up to you to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're mm-hmm. part of the dynamic, you can't solve it yourself. That's when you need external
mm-hmm.
help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, why when you went to that counselor and she explained to you, none of this is normal, what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
You being in that dynamic, you were just taught that, okay, this is how it is. You accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the dua that was you before you married into this family had a different outlook on life.
Right.
Right. Like yeah. you never thought in your wildest imaginations that that would have been normal.
It's not just that. It's like, what efforts is this person putting into it as well? Because there were many, many occasions where I had requested to him and I had asked him, you struggle with your emotions. Like the communication is not working. I feel like you're not listening to anything that I say. Basically, we have an argument. And then because he hasn't internalized, you know, the things that I'm saying, then we have the exact same argument 3 days later. And it's like cyclical, you know, the same arguments, the same things just happening over and over again, like on repeat. And so many occasions for us to go to either a sheikh, right, an imam, or a counselor or a therapist, his arguments were ridiculous. He flat out refused. I refused to go to a therapist or a counselor because I don't want a kafir like knowing my problems and trying to give me advice. Basically, that was his argument. So I would say to him, okay, well, we can find like, you know, a Muslim counselor. And still he would come up with his excuses. No, I don't want anyone knowing our problems. And it was just excuse after excuse after excuse. So when I saw, it was very clear to me that he had no interest in wanting to fix things. That also changed my mindset as well. It made it much easier for me to realize that nothing's changing, nothing, and nothing will ever change. Because if I'm the only person putting in the effort and it's not being reciprocated, then it's a waste of my time, you know?
Right. In terms of like, you know, the dua who you used to be, do you feel like you lost yourself in those 2 years?
Alhamdulillah, like everything happens for a reason. And that's really, really important to accept. I mean, I think that when I was in it, it did kind of break me a little bit. I remember when I had seen my family for the first time in like a year, they had said to me during that wedding trip, you know, your personality is like, you know, you don't have that fire anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can be quite sociable. And they were just like, it's almost like that spark is just kind of lost. Like, it looks like you're exhausted. Your energy is drained. Yeah, I think that anyone who goes through that, they feel like they're not themselves anymore. You can be very depressed. I remember I would sleep most of the day. I would get up in the morning, get my son ready for school, and then just go back to bed and then sleep most of the day because you're just drained. You don't have the energy to like do anything because you're depressed. So yeah, during that time, yeah. But alhamdulillah, now that it's all in hindsight, it's all behind me. No, I see it as, you know, like I said earlier, everything happens for a reason. And there's a reason why you're put in these situations. And the most important thing is for you to gain something out of it, for you to show Allah that, you know, this is a test, this is a trial, but, you know, I'm going to come out on top and I'm going to make you proud. And, you know, I'm going to take what I need to take out of it, whether I understand what that is or not, but I'm going to try. The most important thing for me was to try to understand where are my flaws? Is it communication I need to work on? Is it sabr? Like, what is it? And I've been focusing on those things. If you focus on the negative, oh, I was in such a horrible marriage, he's such a horrible person. If you focus on these negative things, then you're going to continue to have this negative perspective on marriage and this negative perspective on the trials that you go through in your life. But if you focus on the positive things, like, okay, yes, it was difficult at that time, but alhamdulillah, I'm not in it anymore. Alhamdulillah, you know, I've learned that I need to work on these things in myself. If you focus on the positive things, then you have no reason to feel like, you know, you've lost anything. Does that make any sense?
And you know, a wise person once said to me that if you're in a marriage, if you have to compromise all of who you are to be half of a couple, then the price is too high.
Yeah.
That's when you know that you should leave.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not yourself anymore, or you're not growing anymore. You're not evolving. If it hinders your growth and it stops your personality in its tracks,
mm-hmm.
it sounds like for you that you were able to grow again once you left.
Alhamdulillah. And I think really, you know, the like I said, the biggest thing when you're going through these difficulties, you know, having sabr, obviously the in the Quran it talks about the importance of having sabr when you're going through a test, when you're going through a trial, and believing in Allah and believing that this time will pass. You have to continue to have that positive mindset always. So alhamdulillah. And I think that really is the most important thing, is just believing in Allah, finding Allah, you know, trying to read Quran and continuing to believe that there's more. It's not the end. If you're depressed and in this situation dealing with these things, it's not the end. You can get out of it. I mean, when you're in it, you feel like there's no solution. Really, you feel, like you said, trapped, right? But it's like, I think a lot of people fail to realize how many organizations are out there that can assist you, because there's so many. And especially if you have children, you become a priority on their list and they will help you immediately. You can go to your children's school, they can assist you. You can go to your local physician, they can assist you. You can obviously go to the police. Even just contacting people who care about you, like your family or your very, very close friends, they, I'm sure, would be more than happy to assist you. Even just looking into it, just to have a better idea of what resources are available to you, may help you feel safer just for that initial step.
And I know a lot of families are afraid to get a divorce for the sake of their children.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're in a home where there's constant tension, constant fighting, if there's domestic abuse, things like this, I'll tell you that children would rather be from a broken home than be in a broken home.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree with that.
I'll give you an example from me. Obviously, my son would see me crying often. Sometimes, actually a lot of the times, I would then end up going to sleep in his room, in his bed with him. And, you know, I would be crying and he would hold me and he would tell me like, everything's okay. And I mean, he didn't mention anything to me. Like at that time, it was just him kind of making me, like, protecting his mom. I think that that's really what it was, to the extent that he could, because obviously he's a child. But then after we had left, then he did have a conversation with me where he said, like, he felt helpless. Like, it really hurt him seeing me cry all the time. Like, he felt like he couldn't do anything because this guy is, you know, much bigger than him. And as a parent, maybe the child's not talking to you about their feelings when they're in that situation, but you need to understand, and I'm telling you this as an educator, as well as a parent, who's been through this, this does absolutely 100% affect your children, whether they talk about it or not. And it's something that will be with them internally well into their adulthood. In some cases, it can be so traumatizing for them that they require counseling or therapy to help them get through it. So my recommendation is to put yourself out of the equation and think about your children as well.
Right. That's a good message to hit home. So just to reiterate to a message to all the women out there, you know, help us destigmatize this. Divorce isn't a bad thing. It doesn't define you. You would be participating in a cultural shift that, yes, it is okay to leave a man that isn't treating you well.
A lot of women are under the impression that, oh, I won't get someone better than him, right? Because he kind of puts that, like, manipulates it into your head as well. Oh, I'm the best that you'll ever get. I heard that as well. You know, I'm the best man you'll ever be with, and you'll never find anyone like me, and all of these things. And so it gets put into your head, right? You have to understand that a lot of the times I think that women categorize, oh, you know, men are horrible and blah, 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 you know? So it's like you put like a generalization on men as a whole, but there are plenty of guys who are kind. And I truly believe that. I have a lot of respect for women, but it's really important to not give up that hope of, oh, I'll never be with anyone again. I mean, there's 7 billion people on this earth. To think that every single man in the world is going to be a POS is not the way to go. You know, believe in Allah and trust in Allah that the right person is going to come into your life at the right time.
Right. And the fact that, like, we're meant to struggle. This life would be meaningless if we didn't have struggles that were big and small, and if we didn't sin big and small.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This was meant to happen to you.
Right.
And, you know, with that, we're sending you guys love and hope and inshallah. And we reach out to women out there that if you have a story that you want to share, feel free to contact us and we'd love to hear it.
Yeah. And not only that, but you have any questions about anything or just need some support in any way, shape or form, you know, let us know. And, you know, we're more than happy to point you in the right direction of, you know, where you can get that help or assistance.
And if there's like an issue that you want us to highlight on, please provide your feedback.
So, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.